Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Josh DeLionCourt. Josh, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited that you're here as well. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
I am a visually impaired wearer of many hats, I guess is the best way to put it. I write. I have a my first fantasy novel was published last year, and actually just came out on Audible about a week ago. So that's very exciting.
Congratulations!
I do a lot of podcasting, mostly Apple tech related stuff. They make all their products accessible to the blind and visually impaired. So I do a lot of podcasting about that and. Basically writing, podcasting, and programming. I kind of do a little bit of everything, so I'm busy.
It sounds like it. Now, you are... Well, I'm going to ask my traditional question that I ask everyone. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Very much so. I have been a Star Trek fan for as long as I can remember. In fact, there is really no time in my life that I don't remember Star Trek. I grew up in a family, both my parents were Star Trek fans, especially my mom. I started watching the original series when I was about 4 years old, I think. And I didn't lose my vision until I was six, so I remember pretty clearly a lot about the original series. I remember probably three-quarters of the scenes from The Wrath of Khan, because I must have watched that many times before losing my vision, and a little bit of The Search for Spock as well. So the things that existed before I lost my vision, I remember really well, and I've been a Star Trek fan since, and I'm a lot older than 4 years old now, so that's a long time.
You're at least 7 years old now.
There you go.
So now you mentioned that you lost your vision, so this is... forgive me if this is an obvious question, but I have my vision. I do wear glasses. I don't know why I felt the need to throw that in, but I did. So even as I was thinking about talking to you about this episode, I said, you know, the episode we're going to watch and all this stuff. And obviously that's all, you know, you think about watching. Obviously that includes your eyes and vision, right? So how do you watch a Star Trek episode?
Well, in general, it depends on the exact situation. For something like this, it was an episode I had already seen. So when I first watched this episode, when it first aired, almost 20 years ago now, God, that's a long time ago.
It is. It's depressing. Don't think about it.
Yeah. I was watching Voyager, at the time, with my dad. We were both Star Trek fans. As I said, we were fans of Voyager as well. We watched it together. So, as the show was airing, if there were scenes that were especially visual, where there's no dialogue, there's no sound effects to kind of let me know what's going on, he would just kind of fill in the gaps, let me know what's going on, that sort of thing. In general, though, there's also a thing called descriptive audio, which exists for blind people as well, which is like on a DVD, it might be a special audio track where there's description for the action and that sort of thing. And I will use that occasionally. I'm not a huge fan of that in general. So if it's an episode I'm familiar with, I will just watch it and know what's going on more or less. And if I have questions, a lot of times I'll go to something like Memory Alpha to maybe fill in some of the gaps and that sort of thing.
Well, that makes sense. So you mentioned that you saw the original series and Wrath of Khan, Search of Spock. What would you say is your favorite series?
It's definitely the original series. There's no question. And that isn't just because, you know, I remember watching it. I've been fans of other properties and, you know, remember watching, you know, earlier incarnations. And then later on, they bring it back. And I'm like, wow, I like this new version better. So it doesn't really have anything to do with what I saw, what I didn't see. Star Trek for me, a big part of Star Trek for me, is not so much the science fiction. I love science fiction, and that's a great part of Star Trek. But kind of the core part for me has always been the characters. And as far as a great mix of characters and personalities and that sort of thing, I think the original series, for me personally, kind of had it over all the other series. I have a very unpopular opinion that The Next Generation is my least favorite Trek series.
Interesting.
And that mostly is because I love so many of the actors on The Next Generation. I'm a Jonathan Frakes fan. I'm a Patrick Stewart fan. I'm a LeVar Burton fan. I love all these guys. I felt the characters in Next Gen were very, very flat, and they were very uninteresting to me compared to all the rest of the series. I love Voyager. I loved Enterprise, which is uncommon among Trekkies. there are flaws with it, for sure, but I enjoyed the show.
What do you think of the theme song of Enterprise?
I was kind of okay with it. I got what they were going for, that they wanted it. This was closer to us in the timeline, mm-hmm. and they wanted to harken back to that. I wouldn't say that, you know, it was great. It wasn't the choice I would have made, but I didn't hate it the way that a lot of people did either. So Deep Space Nine, I liked until they got to the Dominion War, and that to me felt like it stretched on too long. It was great to begin with, and then after a while, I kind of lost a little bit of interest there. I want to go back to Deep Space Nine because I think I would. I've heard that watching it back to back and not stretched out over like 2 years or whatever for the Dominion War is a lot more enjoyable than how long it ran on the networks. So
yes, compressing it, and plus obviously it's easier to remember what's going on if you're seeing it one right after the other. But you may lose a couple of days of your life though as you watch it, or even a week, I guess, depending on how much binge watching you could take.
There you go.
So I'm going to, obviously, you are vision impaired, so clearly the thing we have to talk about is Geordi. And we have to talk about it even more because The Next Generation is your least favorite series, which is an interesting thing. I think you're the first person who has said that on this podcast, so that's fascinating. So what did you think about Geordi as a character?
Well, as a character, it was interesting. At the time that Next Gen first started airing, I was a good age to have that sort of character introduced to me. So I think I would have been 9, I think, when Next Gen started airing. So something around that age. It was sort of neat to see a blind, sort of blind, I guess, sort of visually impaired, because he is, but he isn't really, character in that sort of mainstream context, I guess you would say. It's not some story you're reading about in school in your Braille class or something like that. This was something kind of separate from all of that. So having something like that at that age, I think, was really cool. Obviously, with the visor and that sort of thing, it isn't he isn't really a blind character in the same way that, say, maybe a Matt Murdock in the new Daredevil series is, mm-hmm. More along the lines of an actual, even he is, obviously he's got superpowers and that sort of thing, so it's different. But
that helps.
Yeah, exactly. But it was still fun, still neat, and it definitely, as a kid, definitely sparks your imagination that in a few years, what kind of technology might exist that will make life easier, make things a little bit better, a little bit different for blind people. Definitely sparked some of that for me, and it wasn't. I don't know that I would necessarily attribute this to Geordi per se, but I know it wasn't long after that I got into programming and that sort of thing. So,
well, clearly it's all Geordi's fault. You owe everything to Geordi. Well, let's stay on The Next Generation for a little bit, because I want to know who your least favorite character on The Next Generation is. Since you thought all the characters are flat, there must be one that you just like less than all the other flags.
You are trying to get me to receive hate mail.
I'm just curious. Because everybody, almost everyone I have spoken to has said one of two things is their favorite series, and it's not surprising, right? It's either the original series, because that's the blueprint for the whole thing, or it's The Next Generation. Now, of course, there have been some other people who have chosen other series, which is cool, and it's always interesting to talk about that, but you are the first person who has chosen The Next Gen as your least favorite, so I'm just fascinated by this.
So, I have to say, as much as it pains me to say it, because I love the actor, it's Picard. I can't get behind Captain Picard. He is so, he has his moments. All the characters have their moments, you know, and the series definitely has its ups and downs. I have not seen every episode of Next Gen because I just haven't been able to make my way through it. I lose interest, but I've seen a fair few of them, and by far, Picard is just he bores me, and that also kind of drives me a little crazy because I really actually do like Patrick Stewart as an actor. I've enjoyed him in other things, but I just don't like that character, and I'm sure some of that is, you know, stems from my love of the original series, because Kirk and Picard are really as far apart, you know, in many ways as they could possibly be. At least I tend to think that they are, and I think in the other series when you had Sisko and you had Janeway and you had Archer, they all had a little bit of Kirk in their characters. It seemed to me anyway. They were a little more bold, a little more brash, a little more willing to, you know, defy regulation. Not to say Picard never did these things, but those characters struck me as a little more Kirk-like, and that character type appeals to me more than Picard ever did.
It seems like Picard and Riker are almost a direct reaction to Kirk, in that they split Kirk into two characters, and they put all of the, you know, the macho kind of you know, quote unquote manly manness into Riker, and they left all of the intellectual diplomatic kind of stuff into Picard. And why they did that, I don't know, but probably because they didn't want to just have another Kirk in the Next Generation. So they just made him mostly Riker as Kirk. And
I would tend to agree with that, although I think, unfortunately, what you end up is with two less interesting characters.
They're not as well-rounded, it's true. Although I think I would say if I were serving on a ship and I had to pick between serving under Captain Kirk or serving under Captain Picard, I think I would certainly pick Captain Picard, just because I think he is a little more reasonable than Captain Kirk.
Well, yeah, for me, it would depend. Am I wearing a red shirt or not? That would be the question.
Well, you have to always assume you're wearing a red shirt. Because
then Kirk would be a much bigger gamble, I think, as your commanding officer.
That is true. So would you say that Captain Kirk is your favorite captain then?
Absolutely. No question.
And it's because of his kind of, he's basically a cowboy, right? A space cowboy.
He wasn't afraid to, you know, defy authority and that sort of thing. And those characters, whether you agree with that sort of feeling or people that do that sort of thing, I think it makes for a more interesting character and more interesting stories than those who don't. And I think in the later captains, I think you ended up with a little more of a balance, right? I don't think we've ever really gotten another captain that was as cavalier about it as Kirk was. They all had, you know, a little bit of that in them, I think, and that appeals to me more.
That's true, and I think that the interesting, they kind of played with that with Picard when, you know, he becomes Locutus, and then certainly in First Contact, because he is acting very un-Picardian in First Contact, because he's, you know, crazy about destroying the Borg, and he wants to keep a ship and all this stuff,
right.
So he does things that are way out of his character, which makes it very interesting. But certainly I think you're right that he is the template that they created with Picard, they seem to not have replicated with other captains, and they've gone more with a more balanced Kirk mix, I think, for the rest. Although the episode we're talking about, which we haven't even gotten to, is a Voyager episode called Distant Origin, Season 3, Episode 23. And so that brings us to talking about Captain Janeway, who I think is an interesting captain. I think that she, especially so before Seven of Nine comes on the scene, she suffers from a lack of other interesting characters that are around her. and she's not really... Oh, you disagree.
I can't really agree with that. I think Voyager is probably my next favorite of the Star Trek series. So, I will grant you there are. I don't think Harry Kim is an interesting character.
Well, how could you? How could any right-thinking person think Harry Kim's an interesting character?
And while I don't harbor the venom toward Neelix that a lot of people do, I would not call him a great character either. But I do think Voyager the show had some really interesting characters. I really liked Tom Paris. Now that I think about it, he is sort of a more Kirk-like character, so maybe we're finding a pattern here that I hadn't realized previously.
It's true, he is the Kirk character in Voyager, basically.
Yeah, I like Paris, I like the Doctor, I like Tuvok, so I think there are some good characters in Voyager, and I'm probably... see, I've got so many contrary opinions when it comes to Star Trek. This is a problem. I'm not a big fan of Seven of Nine. I liked some of her storyline. You know, I like the fact that she, you know, she's this Borg, and she's trying to reassimilate with humans and all these this sort of thing. I think all of that was really interesting, and she definitely has some good character moments and stuff, but... And I don't dislike the character, but I don't have a strong attachment to her the way I do with some of the other characters. And I would definitely say of all the captains, Janeway is my second favorite Star Trek captain. So
Janeway is climbing the ranks with me. Although this episode, she doesn't have all that much to do. So this episode is kind of a weird episode in general. I feel like I say that a lot, but Janeway is in this. The weirdness is I even looked at it. The first maybe 13 or 14 minutes of this episode, there are no characters that we know at all. It's all these aliens.
Very different that way.
Yes, which is interesting, but it's just kind of like it doesn't give them a lot of stuff to do because there are all these characters we know and love are not there. Although I bet the actors were excited about it because they didn't have to do anything. So they had an easy week that week. I will say that I like the Doctor a lot. I think he is, if I had to list my favorite Voyager characters, it would be Janeway first, the Doctor, and Seven of Nine probably are my three favorite Voyager characters. Now, I noticed on your list, you left off someone who is basically the central character of this episode. Well, the central Voyager crew member of this episode. He's not really the central character. Chakotay. How do we feel about Chakotay?
Chakotay is interesting because he has his moments where he is a great character, but he was very underused, or maybe underused isn't quite right, but I don't think they necessarily made as good of use of him as they could have through the run of the series, and he's definitely one of the less interesting overall. But he has his moments where he shines, and I actually think this episode is one of those episodes where he shines.
I would agree with that, although I think that his role in this episode is slightly problematic, and we can get to that when we get to that part of the episode. But so this episode, for people who haven't watched it, is the one in which these dinosaur aliens figure out that they are actually from Earth. And they want, there's this scientist and he wants to prove this and his society is rejecting this. And I thought these aliens, the Voth, were super interesting. And so it made me think, oh, clearly they must have been used again in Voyager because they set up this kind of elaborate, they spend so much time introducing the Voth and showing us their society and showing us their city ships and they've got this doctrine and they have this society that it brings up a lot of issues that we're talking about now in the presidential race about immigration and that kind of thing, which, you know, this was 20 years ago, so it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter, but it was just interesting to see that. And then I realized they never show up again after this episode, which I thought was kind of sad.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, actually, because they're a great alien race. And, I mean, that's one weakness, I think, on Voyager, is that the new alien races, by and large, that they encounter, first of all, they for the most part don't stick around for more than an episode or you know a handful of episodes, and a lot of times they aren't nearly as interesting or fleshed out as they could be. This race was great, and I think it's really disappointing that they have not shown up. I wonder if there's any novels that explore the Voth any further, because I think they're really interesting.
Well, I did, since I thought they were so interesting, I did a little research, which is basically going to Memory Alpha and putting Voth in. And apparently there are two novels that involve the Voth. So that's good, at least. But I would have... So, you know, Voyager has a couple of alien races that they went back to. So for the first season, it was, what, the Kazon, right? Who were super super lame, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wasn't a Kazon fan, either.
And then the Hirogen come up a lot, or fairly frequently, I wouldn't say a lot, right? And so these are the basically the super mean Klingons, I guess is what you would call them. Or maybe space Nazis, I don't know. There was actually literally an episode in which they were Nazis.
Right.
So maybe that is. So they're kind of interesting, but they're a little one-note, because all they are about the hunt, and they want to hunt people, and they're really interested in hunting. Have I mentioned they like to hunt? And the Borg, I guess, in later episodes come up a
lot. Right. That Borg had been around for a long time by the time Voyager rolled around, so I don't. You know, it's hard to count them as a Voyager alien race.
It seems like the writers were obsessed in Voyager with the Borg. I feel like the Borg were super threatening in The Next Generation because they weren't used a lot, but they were used strategically. And I feel like in Voyager, they're like, people like the Borg, let's just use them all the time.
Yeah, they were overused. There's no question. I like the way I think that they were used in Next Gen better, like used sparingly. I think they worked much better, and Voyager did overdo that a little bit. One thing that I wanted to mention here that I think is interesting, and or maybe not, I don't know, it depends on where you're coming from, but to me, I thought it was interesting, is the whole kind of basic premise around this episode with these this race of creatures that evolved from dinosaurs on Earth and that sort of thing. It reminded me a lot of a science fiction series of books that I read by my favorite sci-fi author, actually. His name's Harry Harrison, and the series is West of Eden. And it's not the same type of thing where they leave Earth and go out into space, but it's it does remind me of a starting point for the Voth, and maybe there's some way to make this fit in some kind of crazy headcanon. But in that series, it's a race of dinosaurs. They eventually evolve. It's basically as if the extinction of the dinosaurs never happened. So the dinosaur species continue to evolve, they gain intelligence, that sort of thing, and they evolve side by side with humans, and the dinosaur race becomes sort of the dominant species. And that sort of is mirrored here as well, where the Voth are, you know, technologically superior than humans, and although they have some other issues that I guess we'll get into as we discuss the rest of the episode that make them they have their problems. So
that is like the central belief of the Voth, is that they were the first species that was intelligent in the Delta Quadrant. And so they have this right of, you know, a pride, and they are, you know, the rightful owners, I guess, though they don't really say that, of the Delta Quadrant. And of course, like we said, they never are mentioned ever again. So one imagines, I guess, their area of the Delta Quadrant can't be that big because the Voyager never runs into them again.
So sad. It depresses me. I wish these guys had come back.
I wish they were. I had two things that I thought were going to happen. One, I thought briefly that they were going to say that they were from Atlantis, and that was going to make me angry. I don't know why I thought that, but I did. But luckily, they didn't. And then I thought they were going to be setting it up to have them be a recurring kind of characters, but they never did that. So that was sad.
Yeah, well, I remember watching this. It kind of came, a lot of it came back to me as I was watching the episode. I had seen this episode since it first aired, but it had been probably a good 10 years. But as I was watching it, I was kind of remembering the first time that I watched it. And I remember thinking at the time that Gagan, it almost seemed like they should have, here he is. I don't spoil the ending. Maybe I should wait.
Spoil the ending.
Okay. So basically at the end, he's stripped of his, his place in society as mm-hmm. far as his role as what it was previously as the paleontologist, and he's given this metallurgic role.
Which that, just amused me. So the elder was like, you're not going to be a paleontologist anymore. You can be a mineralogist. And he's like, I guess, okay.
Yeah, whatever. So obviously he's very unhappy about this. And he tells Chakotay at the end that he's not going to have a distinguished career. And he's been obsessed with Earth for his entire career. Here's the ship that's heading for Earth, full of Earth people. Mm-hmm. I kind of expected it when I first watched this episode, you know, 18 years ago, whatever it was, that he was going to go with them and become this new crew member on Voyager. And I think that would have been a really neat touch.
I agree. And he's an interesting character. He would have been a nice addition to the crew, but instead of joining the crew, he just gets a little Earth model from Chakotay, and Chakotay's like, best of luck creating some new metal. We're out of here.
yeah, it's unfortunate.
Which seems, and also, I thought it was weird. Now, of course, the Voss Elder is not a big fan of Voyager and humans in general, because she is upholding the doctrine, and as I mentioned, the central tenet of the doctrine is that these people are from the Delta Quadrant, and Gagan's reaction, his research has found out that no, they're actually from Earth. She's very upset about this, and she doesn't want anyone to know this, and so she, tries to squash this, and she effectively does. So she has no love for Voyager, is what I'm saying. But they are so technologically advanced, I thought the Voyager crew would at least try and see, hey, could you give us some technology? Maybe give us a lift in your transwarp capable giant city ship. but none of that happens.
No, I think, I don't know. There are so many opportunities like that that you think the Voyager crew should be, getting some technology or doing something, find in other ways. And, obviously they do eventually get home. Spoiler horn at the end of the series. But, yeah, it seems like you would think there'd at least be a scene where there's a bid for some of that technology, and they don't even try.
No, and they are shown to be so far ahead of Voyager in technology that they basically, they come across this giant city ship comes across Voyager at a point in this episode. And Voyager is like, arms its shields and is ready to fight. And the city ship is like, no, we're not going to fight you. We're going to transport your entire ship into our ship, which is crazy. Kind of crazy cool. And then we're going to just in like 2 seconds take over your entire ship's computer, take all of your systems offline. And even when you somehow route around it, thanks Tom Paris, and try to shoot photon torpedoes at us, once we figure out what you're doing, which takes us half a second, we'll disarm that as well. So there's no way you can beat us. So I found that kind of the Voth look threatening because they're reptilian, maybe not threatening, but alien, and they are so far advanced technologically that it makes them an interesting potential as a villain, because they don't shoot anything. They just kind of take over your technology and disable it and then do whatever they want. And by the way, they can shoot poison spines out of their arms, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, and they have this technology that lets them walk around Voyager without being detected. These personal cloaking devices, essentially. And that's kind of a neat technology as well. Years before Harry Potter, there was the Voth.
That's right. And that's the interest. So we talked about how this episode is odd in that the first basically 15 minutes don't have any Voyager people in it. The first 15 minutes sets up the Voth, set up what Gagan and his assistant are looking into, which is trying to figure out where they come from. And they find some bones on a planet of some sort that is a Voyager crew member. Although we never find out what Voyager crew member, and nobody on Voyager seems to care, which struck me as odd too, but whatever.
I think it's a callback to an earlier episode, actually, but I don't remember the details, but I think it is.
I imagine it would be, but no one mentioned it. I thought someone would mention, oh, that was crewman, whatever, but.
Right, yeah, they don't They don't give any exposition. You either know or you're expected not to care.
Exactly. And I didn't know, and I slightly cared. But not enough to look it up myself. So, so he's a scientist. They go through a lot of effort to set up this character as a scientist. And he's just looking into this mystery that he is against the doctrine of his own people. But he is, in the great tradition of Star Trek, he is in the pursuit of truth, and he doesn't care about cultural doctrines, right? Although later in this episode, there is an argument in which he said, I wasn't trying to, disprove the doctrine. I was just trying to find the truth. I didn't really care about the doctrine, which the elder does not take too kindly to. But anyway, they set up all this that he's a scientist, and it's very interesting because they use these personal cloaking devices to basically go on Voyager and observe Voyager and make some kind of scientific observations because they've never seen humans before. And I thought that was interesting.
It's interesting, and some parts of it are pretty funny, actually, because they see these random moments in the crew members' lives and draw completely erroneous conclusions on these on what they're seeing, and it really does show that in the pursuit of truth, and there's that aspect of it, and that's definitely hammered home in this episode. Don't let your preconceived notions lead you away from reality, but at the same time, don't jump to conclusions either, because those are very likely to be wrong.
Exactly, and that was interesting. But I thought it was so. The aliens say, "Oh, they'll never detect us with their primitive technology," and they're on Voyager all of maybe 3 minutes before they are detected and revealed.
The fruit will suffice.
Exactly. So, yeah, they're discovered super quickly, which leads to them, one of them gets knocked out, right? So there are two of them. There's the scientist and his assistant, who's a little shifty, and apparently likes the scientist's daughter, because, of course, yeah. There has to be some kind of romance, right?
Right, yeah, something.
It's very vague, though, but it's still there. And so one gets the assistant gets knocked out, and the scientist kind of freaks out, the assistant gets knocked out because he shoots a spine at Chakotay, who knocks out Chakotay, and the scientist takes Chakotay onto his cloaked ship and runs away. Everybody freaks out. and this leads to Chakotay and the scientist coming to an understanding, because the scientist is like, I just want the truth. I don't want to harm you. And Chakotay's like, well, maybe you could lower this force field and I'll help you out because I am also a scientist. Which I didn't realize that Chakotay was a scientist ever.
Yeah, I wondered about that because I don't think that's ever really addressed earlier or later. It's certainly nothing I remember from Voyager. It's certainly not a key point of his character.
Yeah, I thought it was odd because I know Captain Janeway was a science officer. And I thought Chakotay was just a dude.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was part of the Maquis, right?
So. Right, exactly. So I didn't think he was doing a lot of science, but maybe everybody's a scientist for Chakotay. Maybe he went.
Or maybe it was convenient to get the force field lowered.
Could be lying. It's also true. But turns out Chakotay is a pretty helpful fellow because he helps with the Voth scientist to prove his point. Geegan, yes. And he's like, and somehow the city ship finds Voyager, and they take Voyager, and they want Geegan to come back and renounce whatever he said. And Geegan's like, well, I don't really want to do that. And Chakotay's like, well, I'll go with you because they took my ship. And together, they cannot reject your evidence because I will be standing right there. And I thought to myself, they have like 140 humans already. And they're rejecting that evidence. So I don't know how much Chakotay's presence is going to help, but okay.
I got him back to Voyager, so...
It did get him back to Voyager. And then we have this very... Which I think is probably the best part of this whole episode. Well, there's some shenanigans on Voyager, where Voyager's trying to get out, and Janeway is talking to a Voth, and...
Well, and some interesting moments on the holodeck, too, where they're looking at dinosaur species and things, which is a little bit of a weird side trip. It's like your first officer has just been kidnapped, you've got all this stuff going on, some weird alien in your sickbay, and we're strolling around looking at dinosaurs on the holodeck. It struck me as a little... It may not have, except that she has this really weird line leading up to that. It's something along the lines of, oh, it's time for us to go take a stroll through primeval Earth or something like that. It's just like, really? Now? This is the time?
Do you think maybe you should look for Chakotay? I don't know.
Yeah, it just that sequence. I mean, it gets across what it needs to get across, and I understand they've only got 45 minutes to tell the story, but it's a weird section of the episode for me.
And it brings up this thing that is always interesting to see. And of course, you know, the computer is a slave to the needs of the story, right? So sometimes the computer on the ship can't really be all that helpful. Like, it can't cross-reference things by itself. Other times, like in this case, it can conjure up a holographic image of a dinosaur and then extrapolate 60 million years of evolution.
Yeah, it was a good day. It was a good day for the computer.
Yes, yeah, so in like 2 seconds, it was like, yep, this is what it would look like. And everyone was like, oh, well, everyone being the Doctor and Janeway were like, oh, I see. I just thought that was very funny.
Yep.
And then so we get back onto the ship, and Geegan has to defend himself in front of the Elder of Circle? The Circle of Elders or something? Although it's only one person.
Ministry of Elders, I think.
Yes, there's circles and ministries. It's all tantalizing.
The Circles of Science, I think.
Yes,
right?
he is a member of the Circle of Science. And some of them were kind of helping him because what he's talking about is controversial. And his daughter, in a quick scene where we meet his daughter, basically is like, I think you're crazy. I'm nervous for you because, you know, you're going against the central tenet of our belief. And he's like, I am just following the truth because that's what I do. And then off he goes. So he basically, once again, in a very similar scene, the minister is like, will you renounce your findings? And he's like, no, it's true. I've got a human right here. It's obvious that we're from Earth. And she has a great line where the minister yells out, we are not immigrants. And I just thought that was perfectly delivered.
Yes, she was a great actress. I'm not sure who played the head honcho there of the ministry, but I think she did a great job in that role.
Yes, she did. She had enough outrage and enough kind of clear, cold, because they're cold-blooded, calculation and manipulativeness to her.
And a touch of arrogance as well.
Mm-hmm. Because she's obviously, and there's a scene when Geegan was talking to Chakotay about how, you know, we consider mammalian species to be lower than us. But I've never met one, so you seem kind of okay. Although I did think that was odd because there seemed to be a lot of mammalian species about in the Delta Quadrant. And you would think that this race of people who'd been there for millions and millions of years would have come across some. But be that as it may.
I think it seemed to me that they were sort of, they kind of keep to themselves, right? They're not sharing their technology. They kind of deal with the outside races only when they have to. They don't think the outside races have any rights, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that kind of implied thing that we can tell you what to do. We can, you know, later they condemn Voyager to this prison colony, things like that. Like they kind of feel like they rule the roost. And I kind of got the impression that they keep themselves to themselves.
In their giant city ships.
Right, exactly.
Which looked super cool. We didn't see a lot of it, but we saw the interior with Voyager kind of hanging there. And we saw some sets, maybe two sets. And it looked really cool. And once again, I will say I am sad that we never saw more of the Voth because it looked very cool. But anyway,
yep.
I will let that go. And so this is the scene where basically he has to defend his research. She is defending the doctrine, the central belief of their civilization. And basically, she doesn't want people to think that they are from Earth and that they have just, you know, they had to struggle across the galaxies very poorly and, you know, just not as the dominant species, but they had to, you know, run away. And so that does not align with her vision of the Voth as a race. And so she is not convinced by Geegan's arguments. And this is where I feel like Chakotay's presence is a little problematic because he is basically the outsider who comes in and is like, listen, I spent maybe an hour reading about your culture, and I found out that you have revised the doctrine before, so it seems to me you should do this and it will solve everything. which I found kind of annoying, although it happens a lot in Star Trek. You know, they come down, they say, I'm from someplace else, but I think I know the answers, and here, this will solve everything.
Right.
But at least I found it was nice that the Elder basically rejected that. She was like, she wanted nothing to do with that,
which is interesting.
Yes, she was like, no. Because his basically said, your doctrine forbid transwarp travel, which seems highly specific, but...
yeah, how does a doctrine that exists a million years before transwarp is discovered forbid the thing that is not discovered yet? It's... A little questionable there, but...
It seemed odd, but I understood what they were going for. So he said, well, you did it. It kept your race back for thousands of years, but finally some pioneer decided it was done and no great catastrophe happened and everything's great. And maybe this is the same thing happening. And she's like, no, you don't know what you're talking about, you stupid mammal. Shut up. And his assistant clearly disagrees with him. And in comes the assistant, who has been clearly threatened and to denounce his professor. It's all very shades of Galileo here. And he denounces he thinks, oh, the research is all wrong. And the Elder's like, our scientists think that this is just random happenstance and nothing more. And Keegan's like, well, I refuse to believe that you can exile me, but at least I'll have the truth in my heart. And she's like, okay. But also, we're going to strand all of Voyager on some random planet and destroy Voyager. So, if that's cool with you, feel free to keep your truth and study metal. and this is when Geekin's like, well, the truth is good, but I don't want to, you know, be responsible for stranding all of these people on a planet. So, I will renounce my own research and study metals for the rest of my life. And that's it.
Yeah, that's basically the episode. I a couple of things here. So Chakotay, though, has this monologue during this courtroom scene. And this is kind of what I mentioned earlier on, that he has a chance to shine in this episode. And I think the performance is great. I think the monologue itself, I didn't think this so much the first time watching it. The second time through... right before we recorded today, it very much feels like a original series Kirk monologue. Like if it's not delivered the same way, but you can hear 60s Kirk saying those words and making this speech in his own Kirk kind of way. And Chakotay delivers it very, very differently, but I still think it's a pretty powerful scene and works really, really well in the context of this courtroom type drama that's unfolding.
Yes, he leverages his outsider status to kind of say, like, hey, listen, I am new here, but I feel like you've done this before in other circumstances, and maybe it isn't as bad. And, you know, where you see you are clawing your way across the galaxy as these migrants, I see a stunning tale of your success and perseverance. And survival, exactly. And now you've come and built all this great stuff. You have giant city ships and transwarp drives and all kinds of crazy technology. Cloaking devices that can cloak an apple. these are great things. And she's like, yeah, whatever.
It's a great moment, though. It really is.
It is. So, on the whole, how would you judge this episode?
I really like this episode, actually, even with all of the, the things we've also, criticized in it. I think it holds up really well. I was a little nervous going and reading I read the Memory Alpha page before I watched it the first round through, and I was like, oh man, I wonder if this is going to hold up now, 20 years later, and it held up very, very well. I like it. I think this is one of the types of stories that Star Trek tells that are very, very successful because they're kind of timeless stories, right? Like this sort of conflict between faith, doctrines, religion, whatever, and science, you know, it's been going on for, you know, hundreds, thousands of years on our own planet. It's still going on today. This is, here we're seeing a race that are millions of years ahead of us, evolutionarily speaking, and they're still going through it. And I think those kinds of stories are kind of timeless and kind of Star Trek's, and at least in my opinion, a lot of times it's kind of their bread and butter, especially for Star Trek on TV specifically. So I think it's a really good episode of Voyager.
I agree. I think that the Voth, as I said before, are fascinating, and I think that that was probably the best part of this whole episode is how deeply and how quickly they established this entire alien race. And
it was very well done.
It was very well done. So kudos for that. A surprising chance they took by having the first 14 minutes just devoted to setting up this race, and it worked out very well. So good job on that. And good job to you, Josh. Thank you for joining me. This was great.
Thank you for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Next on Random Trek, Deep Space Nine's The Forsaken.